How do you spell Beer Bliss? With the letters G, A, B, and F. Tickets to the Great American Beer Festival, also known as GABF, are available July 30th for members of the American Homebrewers Association and July 31st for the general public. Sample America's finest beers at the country's seminal tasting event. Learn more at greatamericanbeerfestival.com. greatamericanbeerfestival.com. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 18th, 2019. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, we go insane in the yeast strain with Imperial Organic Yeast at Providence HomebrewCon. Steve Wilkes and I are led by Casey Helwig of Imperial as we taste two split-word experiments comparing three different yeasts in each one. Lots of fun and tasty, too. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear, including our tie-dye silicone pint and our Brewing Rainbow shirt. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing. You can find our show page on Facebook. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you do us the favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment, they say that that will help new listeners to find us. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. Thanks to everybody who's helping out that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Steve and I recorded three episodes last night, three video episodes, so supporters should look for bonus content connected with those before too long. In addition to those three video shows, we recorded hop sampler number 11 for the audio side, comparing French Strisselspalt with Styrian Golding and Styrian Celia. And my son Drew joined us to sample those hops, and so I may run that show next week. Let's take a quick look into the mailbag. Joshua writes in and says, I bought a hops vine at Lowe's Home Improvement Store last year and planted it near my deck. It was just labeled as common hops, Humulus lupulus. It grew but didn't do anything but produce a vine and leaves. I assumed it was female and did not produce cones. This year it grew a lot more and to my surprise is producing cones. Is there any way or anyone who could tell me what kind of hops these are? Well, if you've got a female hop vine, that's a good thing. Those are the ones that produce the cones. But, you know, my wife did something similar several years ago. She brought hops from a flower catalog, and they had no description as far as the variety. And unfortunately, I didn't take care of them. I didn't, you know, run a trellis and make them run up. And they were just kind of a shrub. And so they didn't make cones. I didn't know what I was doing, so after 3 years, I wound up digging them up and throwing them into the compost heap. And as I say, they're very happy there to this day. And sometimes they, even though they're still just running on the chain link fence, they still put out a few cones. But one of these days, I'm going to build a hop trellis out there and let them go up it. Anyway, I think that what's more important than knowing the name of the hop that you have or the variety is knowing how they perform in your beer. So, Joshua, I'd recommend brewing a small test batch with these hops, adding them at the end of the boil, or better yet, maybe doing a hop stand, as we do with the hop sampler series. Then you get to know how the hops taste in your beer, and that'll give you an indication of what styles of beers that you can use them in. And even if you do know the variety of hop that you have, your growing conditions may be different from a commercial setting, and you still might get something or harvest something that's different from what you'd expect. So congratulations on the hops. Take care of them. I hope you take care of them better than I did my nondescript hops, and play with them a bit and see how they will perform in your beers. And then you can call them whatever you want. Call them Joshua hops. Lowe's hops. Let's talk about our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. It's hot outside, or at least it is around here. Why not brew with electricity instead of propane to give you the flexibility to brew where you want? High Gravity has been building electric gear for more than a decade, and they sell a wide variety of their own Warthog controllers and turnkey electric brewing systems from 5 gallons all the way up to 2 barrels. And if you go to highgravitybrew.com, you can see that they also sell electric systems from other manufacturers, like the Brewer's Edge Mash and Boil with pump that Dave says is an all-in-one system that's a great value in the 120-volt 5-gallon space at just $399. There are also new controllers from Blickman, and High Gravity has also added more functionality to some of their own Warthog controllers. So head on over to highgravitybrew.com to see how you can take the pain out of propane with some new electric gear. And use the code EBC75BB to save $75 off your electric gear purchase. That's from our friends, family-owned and operated, highgravitybrew.com. Okay, let's go back to Providence, Rhode Island, HomebrewCon, where Imperial Organic Yeast was serving up some split wort experiments at their booth. Casey from Imperial will take Steve Wilkes and me through the tastings. Well, Casey Helwig, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks for having me. I'm so stoked to be here.
So are we. We meaning Steve Wilkes.
Yeah, hey, James. Hey, Casey.
Of Steve's Will Shop, Steve's Brew Shop.com. I haven't even started drinking yet today, and I'm already stumbling over my words.
You're just in the presence of great beer, and you're already losing it.
That's right.
It's the excitement of HomebrewCon.
You got it there. We have, now last year in Portland, we did the Insane and the Yeast Strain at the bottle shop there, and we had a lot of fun, other than the Razorbacks totally blowing the Chicago World Series, or the College World Series right in front of us.
Yeah.
Which we won't talk about that.
That's humiliating.
But we had a great time in tasting these beers. So what do we got here in front of us?
Today, Thursday, is a pale ale wort lineup pitched with 3 different strains. And do you want to hear about the strains now, or should we taste them and then talk about it?
What do you think, Steve? Should we hear about which? We don't want to know which one is which, but maybe if we hear
about the strains.
Yeah, maybe we'll hear about what strains we're tasting. Maybe we can put our unsophisticated palates to use in trying to figure out which is which.
Okay, so we've got 3 different strains that we pitched today. L17 Harvest is one of our lager strains, German lager strains, super versatile, fairly flocculent, pretty clean and straightforward, not really. Just a nice round lager strain. B56 Rustic, it's one of our Belgian Saison strains. So that one's going to throw a lot of clovey, peppery, kind of fruity, maybe a little bit of bubblegum ester profile. And then the third is AO1 House, which is just a straightforward English ale strain. Fairly flocculent, a little bit ester forward, nice and clean.
Okay. So talk about the wort.
It's a pale ale wort, pretty simple grist, nothing super fancy, almost 100% Pilsner malt, and I can't remember it was like 98% Pils malt. Hop profile was super classic Northwest, and we didn't dry hop this, so we're just trying to let the yeast do its thing and shine through.
And were all these fermented at the same temperature?
Correct. No, I take that back. The house and the B56, so the house, A1 house, and the B56 Rustic were both fermented at the same temp. I believe it was about 70 degrees. And the L17 Harvest, we fermented at cool lager temps, 52 Fahrenheit.
Okay. All right. So that'll be interesting to see if the strain and the temperature have something to do.
Yeah, for sure. What was the one that you just made at 98? You did a Pilsner, no chill Pilsner. What did you use?
Well, I'm trying to think.
Sorry, I didn't mean to throw you a curveball.
No, it was the Fest beer, and I can't remember what it was. It was one of y'all. Was it Global? You sold it to me.
I think it was Global, but you fermented it at ale temperatures, and the beer was delicious.
Right,
was my only point.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a flexible yeast. We're discovering, we're doing all these lazy, ale temperature fermented, lagers, quote unquote,
but they're still coming out. Maybe they're not as clean and non-sort of estery as if we had done, you know, the whole lagering thing, but they're still coming up clean and delicious.
Yeah, Global is one of those lager strains that you can ferment a little bit warmer, and it's clean, it's straightforward, it's delicious. It's a fun strain to kind of play around with the temps.
And at that higher temperature, we went on spring break, or we went to see our son graduate from UW, and, you know, like 3 days later, we came back, and boom, it was done.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, not surprised there.
Oh, Esther.
Or no Esther.
Or no Esther.
Okay, so maybe we should just start tasting here. Here is sample number one. So we're all doing the same ones here.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right, and they all look the same. I'm amazed that you figured out how to keep these separate. So, cheers, by the way.
Cheers.
Clunk. We're in the plastic cups here.
Good.
Oh, really, that's very nice.
Yeah. Well, I can pay a dollar for that.
Oh. It's very nice and very drinkable. And I would say the word that comes to me is clean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the malt bill here really kind of shines through. You just get a nice, like, classic Pilsner malt, a little bit sweet, a little bit, like, slightly doughy. But, yeah, that crisp finish, clean and delicious.
You didn't talk about when the hops were added, did you?
It was all during hot side, so no cold side hops were added.
Okay. All right. So that one is nice and clean and delicious. Very, very drinkable. That was my first beer, official beer of the conference.
Wow.
I mean, besides last night, you know, going out to eat.
That 12-pack you sucked down going to the hotel.
Slow down.
I'm kidding, folks.
Mm.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
It's a significantly different beer.
Yeah. Yeah.
This, to me, is the mouthfeel is chewier.
Mm-hmm.
And the hop character comes through a lot more. It's a lot more fruity.
Agreed, 100%. Like more of a softer, fuller mouthfeel. And yeah, that there's a nice, like, underlying ester. It's almost like apricot in character. Mm. Really nice.
Boy, I like the first one. The first one is cleaner, sort of. But this one, boy, I want more.
that one's got a nice pepper note on the front end of my palate. So I pick up a little bit of black pepper, and then that kind of falls away. Usually when I get those peppery, chili notes, they tend to come at the back. But this is like when I first taste it, it's like I've sprinkled just a tiny amount of black pepper on it. I like it.
Okay. Very nice. Right. And here's number three. Oh, wow. That is completely different.
Whoa. Yeah. That's where the magic happens.
That is Belgian-y.
Yep, 100% agree. sample number three is for sure the B56 rustic. So we get tons of pepper and clove and a little bit of bubble gum coming through.
Yep.
It's delicious. It's my favorite of the three.
Wow.
That's my favorite, too.
Yeah, I have to agree. It's a lot of times I've had, sort of the Belgian IPAs, and the hoppiness conflicts with the yeast strain. You know, mm-hmm. It conflicts with those estery characteristics of the yeast strain. This is not that case. This is a very complementary relationship.
Yeah, I'm happy with it. I think because we didn't do a dry hopping on this, it really allows the yeast to shine through and play with the hot side addition hops. Just a lovely beer.
Yeah.
I love this strain also. It's my favorite strain of our lineup. So every time I can use it and slide it into something, I do.
And which one is this?
B56, Rustic.
The Rustic. And we haven't identified for sure what the first two are. I'm assuming that the first one is the lager strain.
You are correct, sir.
Yay!
Yeah. These are actually pretty easy to guess.
Yeah.
Like I say, it is delicious, but the mouthfeel is not as chewy as the other two, in my opinion.
No, it's not. There's just something very luscious and almost decadent about the third beer. Mm-hmm. To me, it just hits all the notes. It's soft. It's chewy. It's a little spicy. It's a little sweet, like a kind of like a kid's candy in a really good way from your memory. There's all those things going on, and that's from the yeast.
Mm-hmm. And the first one, the hop character is different to me.
Mm-hmm. The lager strain, because it's that pale ale wort, and because that lager strain's just so clean and so straightforward, you really get a lot of that hop character kind of coming through. But the body itself of the beer is crisp and sharp, and you get that nice clean finish, very classic lager. But yeah, you definitely can perceive the hops much, much more in the lager than you can in the AO1 or the B56.
Yeah, with the lager yeast, the bitterness comes through. It's more of a resinous kind of a character, in my opinion. Whereas the second one, and remind us which one is which.
First one is L17 Harvest, so Augustiner lager strain. And the second one is AO1 House, English strain.
With the second one, the fruitiness of the estery character of the yeast combines with the fruitiness of the hops to kind of bump it in that direction. It's less resinous, you know, less bitterness in my opinion, but more kind of fruity. All three delicious beers, you know, and I would have multiple pints of each one. But I have to agree the third one, the Belgian one, is the funnest. So do we have to wait till tomorrow for the next round?
Absolutely. you have to come back and see me tomorrow.
Oh, well, we'd probably do that anyway. But what else is going on at Imperial? I saw that there's a new seasonal in my inbox today.
Yep. Kviking, A44 Kviking. It's a Kvike blend. So we've got three different Kvike strains. All isolated and brought over from Norway. I cannot share the origins of these strains. The very generous human that gave us these wanted to keep them a mystery, but it's a really fun blend. It benefits from high temperature fermentations. I would love to see what it does over time, you know, that kind of more traditional take on a Kvike fermentation. And you know, gen 1 it's going to be one thing, and gen 2 it's going to be another, and gen 3 and 4, you know, just kind of successively down the road, it's going to change drastically, I'm assuming,
with repitching.
Right And so I'm super curious to see how it changes over time. Pretty fruit forward, especially at the high temps. I get a lot of pineapple, a little bit of like lime and citrus. It's a fun one. I'm stoked about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
The Kvike seems to be the thing. Steve was asking me, you know, the other day, what's the big beer? What's the big push this year? You know, and I said, I think it's all about the Kvike.
I think so too. They're interesting strains in that you can ferment so hot, and so your fermentations are quick. Some of the strains are really clean, almost, you know, flagship AO7 or 1056 or. O1, very, very clean, straightforward, just standard Chico ester profile. The others tend to be really, really ester forward. Some can be kind of phenolic. They're really interesting, fun to play around with. And like I said, you know, you ferment at 95 degrees Fahrenheit and your fermentations are done super quick. So I think that's one of the bigger benefits of them.
Yeah. Very exciting.
Can you compare it to Loki for me?
The blends, yeah. Loki is a single strain, Voss in origin. Loki, I get a whole lot more like stone fruit and like candied orange peel on the ester front. I don't get really any phenolics from Loki, and like I said, it's not going to really change over time. because it's that single origin strain. It's not a blend, and so you can harvest and repitch multiple generations and expect the same kind of fermentation profile.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I've got a lot of Loki's become very popular. Which is why you guys went full time with it. But I've got people using it for all kinds of beers, and the feedback has been great. So I'm excited about it. And did want to hear what the difference was between at least surface treatment, similar yeast, and why would I use one? And excuse me, I'll be over that in a minute. I've got a salve in the car. But so it's good to hear, you know, because when you look at the packaging, you think, well, why should I do this one over that one? And there are reasons. And so this is a blend that'll bring a completely different beer. Great.
And the thing that we found, they play really nicely with hops. You know, make a hoppy beer with these Kvike strains. It's really fun. But don't like pigeonhole them. You know, they can be used in a really wide variety of beers. I had one made from a local brewery in Portland just recently. It's a farmhouse with Meyer Lemon. And just a tiny, tiny touch of salt, and it's delicious. And it's a completely different beer. They've made, I think that was their third gen on the Loki pitch. And they started out with two hoppy beers, and now they're on the farmhouse. And it's really interesting to see the difference in.
There you go. All right. I'm excited about tomorrow.
Me too.
We'll see how our demeanor and our taste buds fare over the over the next couple of days.
Yeah, no kidding. It's a hard work, really. Really, it really is.
All right, Casey, we will see you tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
Or to the listeners here right now. And Casey, we're back.
Good morning, guys.
You look bright and chipper this morning. And more bright and chipper than we did, or we do. And I think that you did more than we did. So, you know, youth, there's something to be said for youth and enthusiasm.
Fair enough. I feel a little sweaty right now.
Well, you look great. And so do you, Steve.
Well, thank you, James.
So what do we got today?
So we have the Kvikes. So we've got three different Kvikes. Well, actually, two different strains, one fermented hot, one fermented cold, and our new seasonal blend, Kviking, which is a blend of three different Kvike strains.
So what is the what's the wort?
So wort is pretty simple, pils malt, a little bit of red wheat, and we dry hopped these with a blend of Motueka, Bell Centennial, and Galaxy, I think. don't quote me on that. It might have been Eldorado, not Galaxy, but one of those pretty bright, nice, like bright straw color. The Loki we fermented at 65 and at 95, and the Kviking we fermented at 95.
And looking at them, one has more head retention than the other two, and I don't know if that's a pouring issue or if that's just inherent in the beer.
I'm going to blame it on the pouring issue. It's homebrew. It traveled from Portland, Oregon to Providence, Rhode Island.
Well, having traveled half that distance, I can understand. So, so should we try the first one and just see what we got? Oh, that's tasty.
That's really a nice beer. It's got there's a real nice breadiness to it that I like quite a lot. I like beers that taste like they have grain in them. So I don't mean grassy or, you know, but you can tell you're drinking a grain drink. It's very manly.
And yesterday, I had my first beer of the day here and carrying on the tradition here. This is nice and bright. Mm-hmm. It's a substantial mouthfeel.
Yeah.
And I would classify this as nice and cloudy. I would classify this as a NEPA or a New England IPA, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. In terms of appearance, it definitely kind of looks like a New England IPA. Just that like bright straw color, a little bit hazy. Mouthfeel, definitely agree. It's nice and full. I'm assuming that's coming from the wheat.
that was introduced to the grain bill. And then I get a lot of like bright like citrus notes off of it. A lot of like candied orange peel and orange juice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
definitely. And these Kvike strains, I'm assuming that the Loki that was fermented warmer fermented more quickly and got out of the way more quickly.
That is absolutely correct. Yeah, I think we saw about a 48-hour to 60-hour ferment on these guys that fermented at 95.
It's crazy.
It's wild. It's wild stuff.
Now, have you seen commercial customers wanting to move into the Kvike strains to increase their productivity or increase their efficiency and productivity yet?
I wouldn't say they're moving to the Kvike strains to increase efficiency or productivity. I mean, with us, our commercial customers see pretty quick turnarounds anyway, just because we're hitting those, like, you know, brewing science recommended pitch rates. And so they don't have long tank residency time. But I think a lot of commercial customers are not switching over, but experimenting with it. You know, you've got so many strains out there. Each lab has their own set. I think we've got like 20 different Kvike strains in the bank. And they produce all sorts of really interesting flavors. So I think that they can be made into a wide variety of beers. And that, for more than anything, is appealing to a commercial account.
So have y'all experimented with beer styles other than hoppy beer styles in-house?
Yeah, we've made some like pseudo lagers, just straight up kind of American lager, farmhouse. Commercial customer of ours just made a pretty lightly salted, lightly sour beer that they put Meyer lemon in. I'm not even sure how they classify it, but it's super delicious. And then I've had it in like just a kind of classic saison as well.
It sounds like a goza if it's lightly salted with the.
Yeah, but like the salt is not super apparent, and the tartness is pretty subdued. So, I mean, I probably wouldn't call it a goza, but they might get away with it.
We're coming into a time where the labels are maybe less important or maybe more important. Who knows? It's according to who you talk to.
Well, the lines have just become so blurred about what things are nowadays, and there's so much open experimentation. Everything is a piece of a puzzle now that you move around. So I don't know what it would be like a long time ago, or maybe in stodgy old Britain, you know, where it's like, it must be this, or it. We're just like, that's what's so cool about even this conference, is that everybody's just trying to figure out the next cool flavor, and so you play around.
I had a lime stout last night.
A lime stout.
It was kind of Pepsi-ish. It was interesting.
I could see that.
Yeah, I'm glad it's one of those. I'm glad I had it, but I'm not sure that I would have pint after pint of the lime stout. But it was fun. That's why I like this conference. You can do weird stuff and go, hey, I'll try that 1 ounce pour.
Right. And I think I agree with Steve. It's just like, you know, you don't need to be putting beer in boxes as often, especially if you're not sending it to a competition. You know, it's like, is it a good beer? Yes. Would I drink another? Yes. All right. Like, let's go for it, you know?
Speaking of going for it, I've already gone for number two. And this one, I guess I'll go first this time. This one has more of what I would classify as kind of a yeasty presence, maybe. The hops are... It's more kind of malty and yeasty, maybe to my palate, and I'm probably influencing y'all in the wrong direction. But I don't get as much of the citrusy stuff as in the first one. What do you think?
I get a little bit more one-dimensional citrus, but it's very lemony to me, and the citrus is really bright. So I actually get quite a lot, but it's a lemon going a little bit to orange, but a little more one-dimensional. So I'm not getting layers of different citrus notes like I did on the first one. This one seems to be really bright and very easy flavor. I mean, it's a really pleasant flavor.
Yeah.
But it's not a complicated flavor.
Yeah.
And I don't get too much yeastiness out of it. I'll let you have the yeast.
I'll leave that alone. It is very drinkable, though. It's very, yeah. I said it was yeasty, but it's still clean. You know, it's not like a yeasty off flavors. It's just, it just impresses me as more of a slightly more yeasty than the first one. What do you think?
I get, it's really clean to my palate. It's really bright and sharp, clean. A little bit of lemon, a little bit of orange, but not that, like, sweeter kind of candied citrus. More of that, like, kind of more bitter citrus pith. And then it doesn't have any sort of lingering after flavor. It just kind of is there, and then it's done. And it's really just, like, refreshing and easy drinking. I really like this one.
Yeah, The first one I would classify more as a New England IPA. It's more of a New England IPA kind of thing. This one is kind of more kind of a slightly more hoppy Pilsner. Does that make sense?
I would totally agree with that. Yeah, like kind of a American style dry hop Pils.
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, exactly.
I agree.
I need validation.
You're a good person. And a fine little dancer.
God. I would say I wonder what Casey's thinking of us, you know, old goofy guys, but she laughed at some of our Mel Brooks references last night. We went out to dinner, so you told on yourself. You're more of a comedy nerd than maybe you would want to know. I don't know.
If you're not a Mel Brooks fan, come on, guys. What are you doing with your lives?
Agreed. Okay, were you ready to move on to number 3?
Yeah.
This is different again.
Yeah.
I'll let Casey go first this time.
Again, I'm going to say this one is pretty clean. Not a lot of citrus. Maybe a little bit of like tropical fruit, but maybe I'm just kind of looking. Just very, very straightforward. Again, not a strong lingering bitterness or a strong lingering aftertaste. Just a nice, clean, crisp, easy drinking beer.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, just I agree. And a little softer fruit than number 2. All 3 are extremely easy drinking, quaffable beers. This one I get back to having a little more breadiness in it to me. Maybe number 2, the one that had such the bright citrus flavor, maybe that just kind of covered that up, or that accentuated the flavor so much I didn't notice the breadiness. But 1 and 3 both have a kind of nice breadiness that I really like. Just a nice, clean, crisp beer. I'd be proud to brew this any day.
I get more melon than the citrus in this one. To me, the hop character has kind of mellowed out more, kind of like a, not quite cantaloupe, but more of a melony kind of. And now you say I've got a brand new pair of roller skates reference, and then uh-oh. Oh,
somebody's gonna get a brand new key.
Yeah, so somebody dropped their glass, and nobody's cheering. This is a rookie crowd. but I get, yeah, this is more rather than the citrusy grapefruity thing. This is more of a kind of a melon character.
Yeah, I would, as soon as you said melon, I was like, oh, absolutely. Kind of like that, like, honeydew almost kind of melon character.
Yeah.
But that's not quite ripe, you know, that kind of green, green honeydew, kind of a little bit harder than you maybe want. You got it at a buffet on Mother's Day, and you're just like, this is kind of gross, but I'm going to eat it because it's on my plate. So
yeah, I was going to say free breakfast buffet at the hotel.
Well.
Which is bad for a melon, but good for this beer. Yeah. I'm not saying that it's bad. I'm saying that it's a tasty beer, but that's the character that it's bad if you want a melon, but good for this beer. I think all three are good.
They're great. They're very nice beers. My favorite was number 2, but that doesn't, I really just, that just appealed to me. Maybe it's just because, like, orange juice in the morning. Huh. It was just nice and bright and crisp. And,
yeah.
was just what I wanted. But all three are really nice beers, and it's just so, again, fascinating that the yeast is kind of where the magic happens. I mean, we got the same everything except for the yeast and three significantly different beers.
Casey, do you have a favorite?
Number one's my favorite. I like the kind of luscious, creamy mouthfeel and just the super bright, like, candied citrus that I get off of it. But I kind of like number three. I think that might be my second favorite. It's just, like, straightforward and easy drinking. Kind of one of those beers that you'd like to drink on a hot day and on a river, yep, not have to think about.
Yeah, I completely agree. I like the New England character of the number one, but I do like that melon character of number three. Number two is really good, but it's kind of more neutral. It's kind of a lot more of a lawnmower beer kind of,
sure,
a thing. Like I say, kind of an American hoppy Pilsner kind of a thing. Any guesses as to, I mean, I guess it's hard because yesterday's was kind of easy, you know, because we kind of knew what to expect and it was like, oh yeah, that's that, and that's that, and that's that. This is we're not as familiar, and so we don't know.
Well, I'm going to take a wild guess. Because it's the odd man out, I'm going to say that number two is the cold fermented of the three, and that one and three were fermented at the high temperature, and number two is fermented at the low temperature.
So Steve is saying that number two is the cold temperature.
All right. Can I throw a curveball in? I just confirmed with my coworker who actually brewed these beers. The Kvikking we fermented at 65, not 95.
Oh, okay.
So do you want to change your guesses?
So the Loki, we still have, there's two Lokis, one high and one low.
Correct.
And then the Kvikking was at low.
At low, correct. Sorry, y'all listeners. It's day two of HomebrewCon, you know. brain is not 100%.
I'm gonna go the opposite of you. I'm gonna say that the number two was the warm fermented because it has less of the bright hop fruity characters, and I think that during the warm fermentation those kind of blew off. That's my guess. Now you know, Casey, but I don't know. I can't.
It's
a toss of the coin between the other two for me.
My whole paradigm has shifted right out of the universe. I can't. I'm going to drill down to it later.
You and your dimming corporate philosophy.
That's right.
Yeah, I apologize, giving you like an existential crisis over here.
No, but that's good. That's good. It's a little test. Maybe we should do that more often, just like, you know, to shake it up and make sure we know what we're talking about. Okay, so what's what?
Okay, so number one is the Loki fermented warm, 95.
Oh. Huh.
Number two is Loki fermented cold, 65 Fahrenheit. And number three is Kvikking, fermented cold, 65.
Wow. You were more right than me.
Half right.
Well, you was more right than me.
At least my reasoning on the cold thing was somewhat right.
Well, the Loki,
I know,
warm, brought more fruit to the table.
Yep.
And that's got to be, I'm assuming, the yeast. Wow. That's fun and surprising.
Yeah, with that strain, we see the warmer temperatures just really crank out those esters. And, you know, traditionally, as a brewer, you think 95-degree fermentation, the esters you're going to get are disgusting. You know, fusely and nail polishy, yeah, and just solventy. But, you know, these strains are pretty unique in that, you know, 95, some can be really clean and straightforward, and some can just throw just lovely, lovely esters at you, like the Loki.
Well, the nice thing, too, so in my southern climate, it's easier for me now to recommend something. When a guy walks in, he's like, I really want to brew this IPA, and it's got to stay in my garage, and it's going to be 95 in there. Try this, and you'll get a good beer.
Usually we say brew with the seasons and brew a Belgium, Belgian beer. And now we can say brew whatever you want and get Loki or get a Kvike.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big benefits of a Kvike strain.
This is amazing.
I love it.
I love when my when my paradigms are shifted, as Steve said. No, I love when I go into things thinking I have an educated guess here, and finds out my education is not so much.
Well, like I kind of you know, threw a curveball at you guys like right at the very end. So you just blame it on me.
Yeah, there you go. It's a shifty Casey that's shifting our paradigms. Well, this has been a lot of fun, and we appreciate y'all as usual being supporters of the show, being sponsors of the show. And it's fun to be partnered with people who are doing new and exciting things, and the results, as we've heard from many people, you know, in life and around the event, that you know, people love Imperial.
Well, we're happy to hear it. That's what we do. You know, we just want to make good beer possible.
All right.
Nice.
Well, thanks, Steve.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, Casey.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again to Casey and to Steve of stevesbrewshop.com. Those were fun. The first set was definitely easier than the second. I've got some Kvaking yeast on the way, so I'm looking to play with it fermenting in this blazing hot weather, maybe putting the fermentation bucket out on the porch in the heat. So looking forward to that. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. And thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dutson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.